Today, I want to talk about my recent work about the dark matter dark radiation signature and dark matter dark radiation interaction. Okay, so the work is done together with Manoj from UC Irvine and Lloyd from UC Davis. Okay. Here is the outline of my talk. First, why we need a dark matter dark radiation model. Then a specific non-abelian dark matter dark radiation model and its impact on the CMB and the matter power spectrum. Actually, very tiny impact on CMB and relatively larger impact on the matter power spectrum. Then I will introduce the model constraining using CMB and large scale structure data. Okay, so including the Planck SZ, Planck length, and the dark energy survey data, and the recent lambda alpha data. Finally, the summary. Okay, the motivation. Why do we need a dark matter dark radiation model? So the sigma H tension is well known, I assume. Yeah, here is a plot about the sigma eight tension. So where's the laser?
Right and left.
Okay. So here is a plot showing the sigma eight versus versus omega matter derived from the Planck CMB. The red is the Planck CMB results, and the black is the Planck SZ results. And here is the Planck lensing and CFHT lens. We see there is some tension here, right? So that's
two sigma regions or one sigma.
Okay, the solid lines are two sigma. Yeah. Okay, so from this plot we see. We see there is some sigma at tension, especially the CMB versus SZ. The tension is the strongest. But also we know the underlying physics of the SZ is very complicated. To interpret the SZ data, we need some simulations. In the complicated simulations means more uncertainty. Here is a takeaway message. Okay, then. I introduced the non-abelian dark matter dark radiation model I used in my paper. So about two or three years ago, Bill Abbott introduced the non-abelian dark matter dark sector model in this way. They introduced dark matter as a Dirac fermion, in the standard model. It carries no color charge, no hypercharge, but there is some weak interaction for the dark matter in their model. And also they introduce the dark matter is in the fundamental representation in the SUN dark sector. And the dark radiation is associated SUN gauge field. That means the dark matter dark radiation in their model is very similar to our quark and gluon. We know the quark and gluon are the SU3 color gauge, right? So in their model, there will be dark matter dark radiation interaction and dark radiation self interaction. So. And I code the dark matter dark radiation in the Boltzmann code this way. Say the velocity of the dark matter will be affected by the interaction between dark matter and the dark radiation. Also, the velocity of the dark radiation will be affected by the interaction. Because the self-coupling between the dark radiation, so dark radiation behaves like fluid, we only need two equations to describe the perturbation of dark radiation. And the gamma here describes the interaction rate between the two.
Do you have a Boltzmann hierarchy for the dark radiation, or is that treated as a perfect?
We treat the dark radiation as a perfect fluid, so only two equations. And in their model, the interaction rate between the two is proportional to temperature squared. So gamma zero is the interaction rate today. And the parameter space for this model is the 6 lambda CD parameters plus the perturbation parameter here is the interaction rate and the effective number of the dark radiation fluid. So two more parameters. And as I mentioned, there's the interaction between dark matter and the dark radiation only has a tiny effect on CMB.
Sorry, question. What is the speed of sound of dark radiation?
Here we can say it's if we ignore the dark matter dark radiation, this should be 1 divided by square root of 3.
Okay.
Yeah, the standard speed. Yeah. And here I show the dark matter dark radiation induced suppression in the matter power spectrum. Here is the ratio between the dark matter dark radiation model and the dark matter dark radiation without interaction. We see for a typical model there is a strong suppression here. It makes sense. Okay, so here is the basic structure of this model, and I will introduce the
question. Is it just because of the shift in the matter radiation equality, this suppression, or is there a difference?
The suppression here is very similar to the baryon and
sorry, this is just the interaction part, but okay.
Yes, only the interaction part. Yes, yeah. Yeah.
So it's similar to say this baryon drag or something?
Similar to the baryon and the photon interaction, we know the, yeah.
Matter power spectrum.
Yeah, it's a total matter power spectrum, include both baryon and the dark matter.
So is dark radiation this gluon?
It's similar to our gluon, because it's a SUN gauge field, and
so it's a UN gauge field.
Yeah.
So. Is it not confined?
Right. The confined temperature is far below the current CMB temperature. So we don't worry about its confinement for now. Because
in the large universe.
Yeah, in this model, the coupling in the dark sector is tiny. So the confinement temperature is far below 2.7 Kelvin. Yeah.
So if you show the dark matter power spectrum data, what's the chi-square fit for the view cloud?
Okay.
He's gonna get to that.
Yes, we are introduced how this model will improve the sigma 8 tension. Sigma 8 is a simplified way to describe the matter power spectrum. Yeah. Okay, so from the first plot I showed the sigma 8 tension, we already saw that the CMB SZ tension is the strongest. So here I focus on the two. CMB and SZ. Okay, for SZ, it's a very complicated. In a simplified way to see it, first we measure the luminosity or X-rays from the clusters. And here is what we measured. And from a model, simplified hydrodynamic model, we inferred the cluster mass from that observation. But the model is simplified. We find the model-derived mass is biased to the true mass. So we introduce a bias parameter, 1 minus b there, to describe the bias between the model-derived mass and the true mass. So from simulation, we find the bias parameter about 0.8. And from observations, there are many different observations. I only show one of them, one of the observation results. I mean, roughly consistent with 0.81, called the CCCP prayer. The Canada cluster analysis, I forgot analysis. Canada cluster, kind of that. Yeah. Okay, so we know there are some uncertainties, right? At least some uncertainties in the bias parameter. In the previous analysis, model constraining analysis, they use the parameter as a constant because it's from a simulation, we say the bias parameter about 0.8, so they use the bias parameter to be 0.8. And from the Planck CMB and the Planck SZ with the constant bias parameter, they find about 3 sigma detection of the dark matter and the dark radiation interaction. So that's a pretty exciting result, right? But we know the bias parameter is not a constant. I mean, in our analogy, there is some uncertainty. So I redid the analysis, use CMB and Planck SZ with the CCCP prayer. Yeah, that should be make more sense. Here is my results. We find no detection. Yeah. Okay. See, if we fix the bias parameter to be constant, we get a 3 sigma detection as what they did. So if we use a CCCP prior, we get no detection. That's different. Why is the difference? Okay. Here is a CCCP prior we use on the bias parameter. Here the posterior we find. Because the CMB prefer a much lower bias parameter. The sigma H tension is somehow transferred to the tension into the bias parameter. So in that way, we find no detection in the dark matter dark radiation interaction. Yeah.
Which data sets?
Planck CMB plus Planck SZ.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then CCCP is like lensing,
right? It's a sorry, I forgot. I mean, Canada cluster analysis project.
Yeah, but what is the data that they use to measure?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
So the idea here is that this dark matter dark radiation interaction would suppress matter power at lower chips, and so you'd get a discrepancy between lower chips and higher chips.
Yes. 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 Here, Planck CMB prefer a lower bias parameter, that means it prefer a higher sigma 8. So we find no detection of the dark matter dark radiation. Yeah.
So basically, the point is you need one parameter to relieve the tension is either the bias or the gamma naught.
Actually, there are many nuisance parameters, and this one is most relevant in my work. I mean, most relevant to the sigma 8.
I think in general, if you use these deep lensing priors on the Hertzsprung mass bias, you don't actually see a tension between. So that's what's being seen.
Mm-hmm.
Using the optical beam cleansing hydrostatic bias measurements driving mm-hmm. the tension. So it's not surprising that you wouldn't see the.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so from Planck SDA, we find no detection. So I try to test the model use other large scale structure data, Planck lensing, DES, and the lambda alpha. Also, we find no detection for Planck lensing and the DES, though it gives a strong, slightly higher value of the upper limit, still no detection. And lambda alpha is another data set we considered because lambda alpha is kind of sensitive to even smaller scale. And from the matter power suppression, we see that the dark matter dark radiation interaction introduce stronger suppression in smaller scale. So lambda alpha data is sensitive to both the amplitude of the power spectrum, the amplitude, and the local slope of the matter power spectrum. Here is, okay. At a scale about MPC. Here is amplitude versus slope at that scale from a few years ago, the recent lambda alpha measurement. Okay. The dashed contour, 1 sigma and 2 sigma, are from the lambda alpha measurement. You see, here the contour. And the blue contour is from the Planck CMB. Yeah, we see there's strong tension, especially in the slope, right? Here the slope. Here's the Planck CMB and the lambda CDM model. The red contour is the dark matter dark radiation model using the CMB, Planck lensing, and the DES. We say at least from the face value, the dark matter dark radiation is helpful to improve the slope tension. Yeah. Sorry?
What's the redshift for these
lambda alpha measurements? At a redshift of about 3. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, summary. When the sigma tension motivated the dark matter dark radiation model, 2, the interaction is not detected as previous works claimed due to the mass bias uncertainty. 3, the interaction is not detected from CMB, lensing, and DS. And 4, lambda alpha is sensitive to the smaller scale power matter power spectrum, might be useful to detect the dark matter dark radiation interaction. Okay, thank you.
Have to be able to detect dark radiation in the laboratory to be sure it exists. Okay? And there have been several attempts recently, experiments
mm-hmm.
to detect dark photons. They've come up empty-handed so far.
From cosmology, we somehow prefer there is a dark radiation component due to the Hubble.
That's my next comment. This month, several papers have appeared
mm-hmm.
about Hubble tension. And the latest paper by Adam Rees et al., beginning of this month,
mm-hmm.
it's now reaching 4 sigma. It's not going to go away, in my opinion, nor according to Rees's opinion, which is more important than my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But, in that case, there have been these several papers put in the dark radiation in the early universe before the CMB to see if they can solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The data is very constrained, and it doesn't really help, apparently.
So did you look at this issue that the Hubble tension for the model?
Yeah, between the local measure and using.
But they have to do it for their model. So, I mean, have you done it for your model?
I mean, no.
They have to do it for their model, for the Hubble tension.
Well, the tension for Hubble is more significant than
But in this model, we don't know. I mean, they have to look at it in their model.
No. Right. Oh, right. That's my question. Yeah. Will you look at this problem?
Okay. We didn't include the Hubble tension data in our paper because the sigma at tension is our focus here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the best value of Hubble? Does that change or does that, I mean, presumably error gets bigger with the Hubble?
You mean in our model? Yes, slightly bigger due to the dark radiation component. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's somehow preferred by the higher local Hubble extension, Hubble constant measurement. Yeah.
So this comment is unrelated to my talk, but just on the Hubble tension, so Planck has measured a low H naught, and now there are other CMB experiments that are also trying to do an independent measurement of H naught. So for example, the Atacama cosmology telescope.
Yeah, but the neutron star measurement is still poor.
No, this is CMB, the microwave.
The microwave, yeah. Well, these reviewed papers, at least three papers have come out in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Reviewing the whole thing. And there's a problem for Lambda CDM.
I think Matt is suggesting that maybe Planck is wrong.
Oh, yeah, we can check if Planck is wrong. A bit.
You can suggest it, but how do you prove it?
Well,
by measuring it independently.
They have their own data.
Well, you have your own data.
Yeah, he's got his own data.
So we should have new measurements with results sometime in the summer. That'll have comparable constraints on the Hubble constant.
We don't know yet.
We have to see. We have to finish analyzing the data. Right. Give me just a sec. Thanks. No, yeah, as long as it works, it's fine.
It's the map of dark matter you might like.
Let's make sure that it works. Yeah, it's in the browser. You guys can hear me, I think. It's fine. Hi, my name is Matthew Mother-Schirtle. This is just some work that we did with Nilima Segal, Beck Schoen, and Alexander Van Engelen. This is specifically looking at the cosmic microwave background measurements with the aim of undoing the lensing effect that happens. So cosmic microwave background photons come from the last scattering surface and then encounter matter late in the universe. So we saw plots of the matter power spectrum. You can essentially measure this lensing signal from the CMB itself. And I'll try to motivate in the beginning of my talk why delensing is important. So the idea here is that when you, so many of you, most of you are probably familiar with the fact that we have CMB power spectra in temperature and polarization that has these familiar acoustic oscillation structure. And when people talk about delensing, people tend to focus on these B modes, which are interesting on this plot of the temperature E mode the CMB E mode and CMB B mode polarization. You can see that if you have a primordial gravitational wave signal, then you're measuring these tensor-induced B modes at very large scales. But because of the fact that lensing in a map shifts CMB power around, it can convert E modes to B modes. And so traditionally, when people talk about delensing of the CMB, we focus on removing the lensing-induced B modes in the CMB so that we can better measure the gravitational wave signature in the CMB. But that's not what this talk is about. This talk is about measuring the undoing the lensing signal and the temperature and E-mode polarization. So if you look at this plot, this is showing just a familiar temperature power spectrum. And this is the difference of the lensed power and the unlensed power. And because lensing is shifting power around in the map, you look at a difference, you have this oscillatory structure. It essentially is pointing out the fact that when you lens a map, you tend to smear the peaks. And that smearing of the peaks shows up as these oscillations in the difference. So there's a lot of information in that peak smearing, because if you're able to measure that peak smearing, then you're mapping out, you're inferring what the matter distribution layer in the universe is. And you can learn about things like neutrino mass. But there are good reasons why you might be interested in undoing that lensing signal and getting an unsmeared power spectrum. One of these is that certain parameters that you try to measure with the CMB, for example, the number of light relativistic species early in the universe, they affect the positions of these peaks. And this plot shows, it's a zoom in on a high L peak in the temperature power spectrum. And you can see that these dashed lens power spectra, when you delens them completely, you sharpen these peaks. And then you can get a better handle on differences in things like the number of light relativistic species. You can resolve that peak smearing a bit more. And you can improve your constraints on an effective. It's not a dramatic improvement, but it's still improvement that might be very helpful in discovering differences in the standard model of cosmology, where you assume you have just three light relativistic species coming from neutrinos. The improvement is even more dramatic if you assume that you don't have BBN consistency and if you free up the primordial helium abundance. But let's just use this 30% improvement as one possible motivation. Another motivation is that if you're going to do a joint analysis of the CMB power spectrum and a reconstructed map of the lensing lensing and its power spectrum, which effectively probes the matter power spectrum directly, then if you undo this lensing, you effectively reduce the covariance between the two-point measurement and the four-point measurement, and it becomes easier to do the analysis. So how can you undo this lensing signal on the CMB? The general idea here is not too different from what you'd do for B-mode delensing. If you had some idea of what the gravitational potential in the universe is, some measure of phi, then you take your lens CMB map, which is just a remapping of the unlens CMB map, which you don't know a priori, and then you just shift back the positions of these, shift back points in the lens map based on this template that you have of what the lensing potential is. And then you get something that is approximately the true unlens spectrum. It's not exactly the true unlens spectrum because this is not exactly the inverse lensing operation, but that's a minor detail. Now, where would we get such a template from? You could go to large-scale structure. You can measure the distribution of galaxies. You can look at things like the cosmic infrared background. But it turns out you can reconstruct this lensing potential template from internally within the CMB itself. And the reason that it's really helpful to do that is because if you look at a plot of the weight that lensing in the CMB gets from different redshifts, you find that there's a lot of contribution that comes from high redshift that isn't traced by, so the CIB, for example, will peak around a redshift of maybe 2. Galaxies will peak around here in redshift less than 1. So all of this CMB lensing contribution is coming from redshift greater than 5 above here.
Is your kernel per unit log dz times the growth factor?
This is, sorry, say that again? So this is the kernel that appears inside the integral over the Kolmogorov distance times, so whatever is not in the multiplying the power spectrum, matter power spectrum, and you integrate it with Kolmogorov.
The matter power spectrum evolves with redshift as well, meaning that even though the kernel has a lot of weight, the actual contribution to the CL is suppressed by a power of Z.
Right. So I agree that it's slightly misleading to look at this plot. So you can actually look at a plot where you plot the actual contributions to the CL55, so this is the lensing power spectrum as measured from the CMB. And then you can ask the question precisely like at any given L, what contribution do you get from different redshifts? So if you look at redshift less than 1, where most of the galaxies that you're going to measure are, they come from, they contribute roughly maybe 70% if you go to redshift less than 2. But redshift greater than 5 gives you a significant amount of lensing that you can't remove. So in the lensing matter power spectrum of the CMB itself, you have something like 30% power from redshift greater than 5. And that's a function of L, as you mentioned. So
it's not known who made this plot. Yeah.
So Blake Chauvin had this plot, and he wasn't sure if he made it or Duncan made it. It's kind of ambiguous. But there's a similar plot in a Planck lensing paper that's slightly different. It looks at the mass contributions from HALOs. But this plot actually doesn't appear in any published paper, I think, unless, yeah. So how would we go about reconstructing lensing from the CMB itself? So as I mentioned earlier, lensing is just remapping points, conserving source brightness. If you write that remapping equation and transform to Fourier space, then what essentially happens is that you started out with a Gaussian field where the different L modes in this field are uncorrelated. But because you have this remapping of points, they become previously independent modes become coupled by a factor that's proportional to the lensing potential. And intuitively, if you wanted to ask the question, what CMB modes contribute to a lensing mode of size large L, then you get contributions from triangles that your contributions from CMB modes that make up a triangle with that L mode. And you can turn this intuition around to write down an estimator for the lensing potential at a given big L itself, which is essentially a weighted sum over modes of the CMB. Okay, so if you make the template this way, then how well can you actually delense the CMB? There's a paper by Dan Green, Joel Myers, and Alexander Van Engelen that looks into how well internal CMB delensing can do for things like a CMB stage 4 experiment where you measure where you really start to measure the E-mode polarization, and you don't quite remove all of the lensing when you do this, but you get close to it. So that's what I'll be talking about. So with the Atacama Cosmology Telescope, we attempted to measure this peak smearing effect by undoing it using lensing. But we encountered an issue when we looked at real data analysis. So it turns out it's not so simple. So this is just a plot showing the lensed and unlensed spectrum. And again, from simulations, none of this is data. So we wanted to validate our pipeline. So we looked at the lensed minus delensed power spectrum that I showed earlier. Now, if you use this reconstructed potential template using the quadratic estimator and you delens the temperature map, and then you take the power spectrum of the delens temperature map, and you compare it to the the power spectrum of the lens temperature map, it turns out you get this large bias that doesn't fit your expectation of what it should be. So we wanted to understand what the source of this bias is. So a clue that you get is that if you, let me see what, so this is, right. One of the things you can do is just, instead of putting in a template map itself, you can put in an input, that you can put in the true input potential map and just add Gaussian random noise to it that's independent of anything that, that you had in the previous, in the map before. And if you de-lens with that, then you completely remove this bias and you get something that is, doesn't remove all of the lensing because you don't have, because you're, you still have some noise in your reconstruction. So if you had no noise in your reconstruction, then you would get this green curve back. But since you have some noise, you don't have full, complete signal to noise in removing all of the lensing. But the crucial point is here is that if you put in a lensing template that is the true template with noise that's independent of the CMB map that you reconstructed from, then you don't see this bias. So that's a clue telling you that this is coming because you've tried to the noise in your reconstructed potential is somehow correlated with the temperature map. So to confirm that intuition, you can just work through the math. This is just a lens remapping that I showed earlier. And if you Taylor expand this and make the assumption that only the first or the first term in the Taylor expansion contributes, then things simplify a little bit and you can write down the delens temperature as just a remapping with the input reconstructed potential. And then you can transform the Fourier space and eventually you want to take the power spectrum of this. This is just writing out the actual reconstruction potential in terms of the, here, x and y are temperature. And these weight functions depend on the power spectra of the CMB. So if you plug that in, it turns out that you get contributions from, so this is the power spectrum of the delensed field. This is the true unlensed field. That's the thing that you'd want to reconstruct to get back. But then you get terms that are higher order, essentially because the quadratic estimator is not it's not completely unbiased. It has higher order correlations. And if you just write down the first order, the leading order correction to this, it's just it's a 4-point function in the temperature, but there are other corrections to it. And this bias exists even if you send, if you assume that there was no lensing in the map to begin with, which is telling you that this is coming from correlated CMB noise that's in your reconstruction. So that's bad. So if you wanted to do this on a future CMB stage 4 experiment and completely delens the maps and get back the true delens power spectrum, we don't want to be measuring things that look like that. We want to have a sensible thing that we can forward model and then use to constrain parameters.
So let me just ask something. There are two different questions, getting a delens map and getting delens power spectrum.
Getting the delens power spectrum, yes.
Delens power spectrum and delens, those are different things. So you could basically, there are two different pipelines to do that if you're
Yes, but if your delens map has correlations that, so you, no matter how you take the power spectrum, you're still going to get the bias, right?
Right, but, saying, but you don't have to actually have a delens map to have a delens power spectrum, because basically, you just, I mean, formally speaking, you could do an MCMC with basically two things, which is, I guess, the CMB power spectrum and the lensing power spectrum, and marginalize over everything else.
But so you're talking about doing everything at the power spectrum level without actually measuring the true realization of the, so.
Yeah, because you can never do that perfectly, right?
So it's suboptimal to do that because you don't actually know what the true realization of the lensing in your,
that's right,
in your field is. So you could do that. And that's exactly what you do when you just take the lens power spectrum and you know MCMC over it.
You're
exactly right. So that's the 30% you know improvement that you get is coming from the fact that you measured the true realization of the lensing potential and you've removed it. And so you don't have that sample variance contribution there. Right. So that's the motivation to do this, not at the power spectrum level.
Do you measure it from
So you can ask the same question for delensing B modes. You have a sum of modes from primordial gravitational waves, and you have lensing, and you can just fit it at the power spectrum level.
Yeah.
But you gain a lot more in signal to noise in detecting R when you go to high L. If you actually image the lensing modes and subtract them out.
Ignore all the higher order correlation functions. I'm just saying that there are two different goals here. Measure, if you want to measure the power spectrum of lensing, or the CMB.
Yeah, it's a question of what the error bars on that measurement or the parameter you're interested in will be. And if you've measured and imaged the actual lensing contribution and removed it, you dramatically increase the error bar.
Decrease or increase?
Decrease the error bar.
Yeah. I think I understand what you're saying. This problem that you're saying is because you're trying to go through making a map, but that map that you make is noisy and has correlated noise, and that kind of that goes into the power spectrum, which is exactly what you're saying. So I guess I'm just saying that if you want to design a method, you want to design it for measuring what you're interested in, not for measuring something that you're not interested in.
I also kind of get you were just saying if you actually wrote down a full likelihood for the lensing, you don't have to do this step, right? You can just model and sample over like variations of the lensing potential.
That's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, but it's super hard to do that, and there's been some recent work on you know actually writing a full maximum likelihood solution to lensing, and you need to do some tricks to do that. But if you're just sticking with a quadratic estimator or like a iterative quadratic estimator, then this you have to deal with this. So for this particular paper that we wrote. And for ongoing measurement with ACT, one proposed solution that we implemented was, this has been used in other CMB lensing analysis, is if you imagine that you use on a 2D Fourier space, you used all of these modes to reconstruct a lensing map, and then you delensed all of these modes in the CMB, then because of the fact that the reconstruction noise is correlated in among those L modes, you get this bias. So one possible solution is to, in 2D space in the CMB map, you only delens these modes using a reconstruction that's made from mutually exclusive modes. And then if you do the calculation and if you actually look at the simulation, you get zero bias because the reconstruction noise that comes from this part has only contributions from CMB modes that are outside this analyst. And so you don't get this bias. And then you can do that for each CMB map analyst. You use mutually exclusive modes, and you do this. But you do this, and you lose some signal to noise, because now you only have lensing modes from a smaller subset to actually do the reconstruction. So once you do that, like I said, you get no bias. You get exactly what you would get if you used an input potential with Gaussian random noise. But you decrease the signal to noise. You don't actually remove all of the lensing. If you had perfect delensing, then you'd be sitting on top of the green curve. So the amount of signal-to-noise hit that you take depends on how much you split this analyst in, and there's physical limitations on how well you can do that. This is not an ideal solution, but it's a temporary solution that's fairly easy to implement. Since then, there have been detections of the delensing of acoustic peaks. The main example is from Planck, this paper where instead of going through this analyst approach, they simulated this bias by just doing these reconstructions and delensing on lots of simulated maps, and then getting a model for what that bias looks like, and literally just subtracting that bias out. So you can do that if you have a high signal to noise, but you do become very sensitive to simulation mismatches. If you simulated slightly incorrectly, if you have wrong power in your map, then you'll delens too much, and you'll add extra power, and then you'll misestimate your parameters.
What's the spectral shape of the bias look like?
It goes up at high L for, it depends on which, okay, so there's many details that I can go to. It depends on whether you're delensing a temperature map or an E-mode polarization map. It depends on whether you're delensing with a quadratic combination of temperature and temperature, or a quadratic combination of temperature and E-mode polarization. But the largest is if you delens a temperature map and it seems to go up at high L, but it's also not really all that easy to model. So you can, I guess you can look at this plot; it's probably clearer. So the bias is in purple. It's order the same size as the signal you're looking for, and you have to subtract it out. But there's been progress since then. Theory work on subtracting this out in a more robust way. And the method suggested by Toshiya and Namikawa in this paper in 2017 was to write down an estimator for the bias itself. And this is similar to the way you would subtract a Gaussian disconnected component bias from the lensing power spectrum itself. You write on realization-dependent estimators. For what that means is that you have an estimator that depends on combinations of your simulation and your data, so that the actual bias that you, so you use simulation so that you reduce the noise in your estimation of the bias, but you use combinations of data so that you're not sensitive to mismatches between the simulation and the data up to a linear order. And so she has written down you know, similar estimators for these biases for the BMO delensing case, but it hasn't been worked out for TE, T and E delensing, because if you look at BMO delensing, you just have, if you start out with unlensed BMODs being zero, then you don't have higher order correlations. And in the temperature and E-mode polarization case, you get 8-point functions, which haven't been worked out. Right, so that's about it. Any questions in there? So I have a few minutes left, so let me just add another point that I just added yesterday, which is that this is one step in your delensing. But when you get a really high signal to noise, what you can do is iterate on this. And so I mentioned maximum likelihood techniques, where you would write on the full lensing likelihood. You can make claims that taking the quadratic estimator and iterating by subtracting and then re-estimating at each step is somewhat equivalent to maximum likelihood. And so this is just showing that if you had zero noise in your maps, then you can, one step of this iteration that I showed, which is everything that I've talked about, is actually super suboptimal. So this is the temperature power spectrum. But if you keep iterating, then you can remove all of the lensing after you iterate, especially at the small scales. And this is not something that's been shown previously. So if you started out with a lensing noise curve on the lensing power spectrum, that's, you know, it's impossible to get higher than one signal to noise at small scales for the traditional quadratic estimator. But if you keep iterating, you can start to image these small scale modes. And this is just showing that for this for a CMB stage 4 case, where you iterate and you improve your reconstruction more and more, but you converge to a final value that you can't get beyond, you know, some approximate Fisher limit. Right, so there's more work to be done here and showing that, for example, iterative delensing on temperature and polarization maps could improve these parameter constraints better than people have shown before.
Is there like a way to see why the like using the quadratic estimator once gives so super suboptimal results at the high L?
So if you can write out. The quadratic estimator is written on the assumption that the Taylor expansion kind of holds. So especially at small scales or for high kappa regions, this approximation doesn't need to hold. And if you try to predict what the signal to noise of a lensing reconstruction with the quadratic estimators, you're always limited to one at small scales. Kendrick has thought about this as well. And if you have any comments, Chad.
I'm just sort of curious at this point if it helps with the. It's helping a lot about in the high L tail.
Mm-hmm.
How much does it help for the narrowness of
For
sharpening up the peaks, which is what matters for an effective.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So I think that what Dan and Alex and Joel have shown in their paper is that if you just delens with one step, for the acoustic peaks, you get something pretty close to what you would have gotten if you completely unlensed. It's really the small scale regime that where you get this improvement. And it's a small scale regime where lensing hasn't been fully worked out yet.
The thing I remember about there is that the big improvement is happening on scales where the KSC is kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
The KSC is really not Gaussian.
Yeah.
They have some unpredictable effect on these endpoints.
Yeah. Yeah. If you iterate in the presence of foregrounds, that's also something that can mess things up and hasn't been worked out.
that's configured by Boltzmann.